to all of you. I'm Sharon Davey, Director of the University of Virginia Women's Center, and it's such a pleasure to see so many of you here today. I recognize so many faces, and there are new friends who are here as well. I want to welcome the alumni and alumni, I better say, who flew here from all over the country to be part of this celebration of women, and also to recognize the 40th anniversary of full co-education at the University of Virginia. Yay! All right, that deserves applause. Of course, you know, we use the phrase full coeducation in the college, at the university. But these were women who were walking on the grounds and into classrooms, into a completely new situation. They really blazed a path of transformation. We were talking last night at a panel of people who helped to bring coeducation about, full coeducation at the university, and it was clear that there has been a transformation because of that decision, a transformation of this institution. And of course, it's better, though, because we are here. We are here to honor an extraordinary leader. Dean Meredith Wu will introduce Alexandra Arriaga. And it is my pleasure to tell you just a few words, just a little bit, about Dean Wu. Meredith Wu has been Dean of the College and Graduate School of Arts and Sciences since June 2008. She came to the University of Virginia from the University of Michigan, another great leader from the University of Michigan who joined UVA, where she served most recently as Professor of Political Science and Associate Dean for the Social Sciences in the College of Literature, Science, and the Arts. Prior to her 8 years on the Michigan faculty, she taught for 12 years at Northwestern University, where she helped rebuild the political science department and co-founded the Center for International and Comparative Studies. She is especially proud of her role as executive producer of a documentary film, Koryo Saram, The Unreliable People, chronicling Stalin's ethnic cleansing of Koreans during the Great Terror. The film premiered at the Smithsonian in 2006 and was awarded Best Documentary by the National Film Board of Canada at the 2007 Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. She was educated in Seoul and Tokyo through high school. She came to the United States in 1976. She graduated magna cum laude from Bowdoin College in 1980, having majored in English literature and history. She received master's degrees in international affairs in 1982, Latin American studies in 1984, and a PhD in political science in 1988, all from Columbia University. Dean Wu has said that when she arrived in the United States, as a young student, the idea that she might one day be a leader at one of the nation's top universities would have been an idle dream. She says, 30 years ago, I was one of the few foreign students and the first Asian woman to enroll at a small liberal arts college in Maine. Much has changed since then. There are many international students who add richness and strength to our university and to universities across the country. And Meredith Wu has become a leader, a visionary leader, at one of the nation's top universities. We are very fortunate that the university she helps to guide and shape is the University of Virginia. Please join me in welcoming Dean Wu to the podium.
Thank you, Sharon, for your extraordinarily kind words. When I was coming here, my assistant, who sometimes writes speeches for me, gave me a text that was like 12 pages long. And I said, what are you doing? 12 pages for me means about 20 minutes of reading. And I was told by Sharon to talk for 5 minutes. And he said, well, I can't possibly write a shorter speech given the accomplishments that our speaker, our honoree, has accumulated over time. It is really my great pleasure to bring to you greetings from the college and to introduce our speaker and honoree. Alexandria Arriaga received her bachelor's degree from the college in 1987, just 15 years after the first group of women admitted in 1970 graduated from the college. The university has come a long way in those few years, and Alex took advantage of that change. As a student, she was a member of Alpha Phi, served on the Honor Committee and the Intersorority Council, was on the resident staff, and became president of the Arts and Sciences Council. And in the college, she majored in Latin American Studies with a minor in Russian Studies. The daughter of a Chilean mother and Argentinian father who worked for the United Nations, Alex traveled throughout Latin America as she was growing up. During her teen years in Chile, she saw repression and rights abuses firsthand. That would be Chile of Pinochet, and that would also be Argentina of the Dirty War, which saw thousands of people disappear. Great tragedy. These experiences have shaped a life and career devoted to human rights. I might add, as a personal aside, that these experiences were also something indelible and formative in my life. I was growing up in Korea in the 1970s, which experienced a similar kind of authoritarianism as in much of Latin America. Collectively, the experiences in East Asia and Latin America gave us political scientists a new lexicon, and that was called bureaucratic authoritarianism. And a lot of students in political science grappled with the notion that as terrible as bureaucratic authoritarianism might be, and it was, that there seemed to be a particular type of economic growth that was associated with the kind of terror experienced in Latin America and East Asia. And that eventually became the dissertation that I wrote when I was studying at Columbia University in New York. And so I know the kind of experience intellectually that shaped Alexandria. After graduating from college, Alex decided to take her passion for human rights advocacy to Washington to work for progress through the government. First, she joined a bipartisan Congressional Human Rights Caucus, where she worked with leaders on both sides of the aisle. In addition to directing the Human Rights Caucus, her time in government also included work for the State Department and the Office of Special Envoy for the Americas. Her efforts with Congress and the administration stretched across the Reagan, Bush, and Clinton administrations. Then for 7 years, beginning in 2001, Alex joined Amnesty International USA, where she served as Director of Government Relations and worked tirelessly to end human rights abuses worldwide, from the Sudan to China to Colombia to Turkey and more. In recent years, Alex has taken those experiences in government and nonprofit settings to build a consulting practice in which she works with other organizations that advocate for human rights. She also works in support of children with special needs. Hers has been a remarkable and distinguished journey from Latin America to the university, to Capitol Hill, and to countless places around the globe where human rights are threatened. Alexandra Arriaga is indeed a distinguished alumna. It is my pleasure to join the university and the Women's Center in saluting her today.
Yes.
It is now my great pleasure, on behalf of the University of Virginia and the Women's Center and all of us here, to present the Distinguished Alumna Award for 2011 to Alexandra Arriaga. But before I give it to her, I want to read you the citation. The University of Virginia Women's Center presents the 2011 University of Virginia Distinguished Alumna Award to Alexandra Arriaga in recognition of the vision, strength, and creativity that you have brought to serving the cause of human rights and human dignity across the globe. Throughout your career as a leader for Amnesty International USA, in the Office of the President of the United States, in the Office of the U.S. Secretary of State, in the U.S. Congress, and at the United Nations, you have been a powerful and inspiring force for change. The University of Virginia recognizes with pride the model of dedication and extraordinary leadership that you bring not only to this institution, but also to the world.
Thank you so much. I am deeply honored and very, very grateful for this, just this extraordinary honor. I have had the great fortune throughout my life to be able to work on issues that I care about passionately, that are extremely fulfilling to me. And so when I heard I would be receiving an award for the work I was doing, I was astounded. I thought that that was really quite amazing because it's something that I have enjoyed at every step. I am truly honored. I thank you from the bottom of my heart to the Women's Center, to the University of Virginia, and to all of the alumni who are here, my dear family who has come from so far. I have to share that as a first-generation American who was born Maria Alejandra Arriaga, I still chuckle when I think about the fact that I now have a Tommy Murphy as a son. And you may hear from him at different times of the program. He's watching a video, but he likes to express himself. So... I thank you very much, Sharon and Dean Wu, for your kind remarks. I at a very young age, had the opportunity of being born into a family of great parents. My parents instilled in me and in my sister a great sense of self-confidence, and they gave us enormous support. We did travel extensively. We came to appreciate how small the world is and what a great responsibility we have to do what we can to make a difference. These lessons are a very vibrant part of the University of Virginia, and I am so proud every time I return to the university to learn of the steps it is taking and how it is embracing the world and instilling in its students the notion of service and that we are one global community. My parents were very supportive, even when I did take time off before coming to college to go study ballet in New York. I studied with the Joffrey Ballet. It was a magnificent experience and a highly disciplined time. And I'm often asked, why did I leave? And the answer is, I like food. And ice cream, especially. But it really was a great time, and I appreciate my parents, who must have been quite nervous, to give me that chance, and then to have me decide that at the age of 17 or 18 that I was making a career decision and that I did want to go to college. So I'm very grateful. One of the key formative times of my life was what Dean Wu spoke about, which was when my family went to Chile for 2 years in the late 70s. It was during the time of the military junta. And I, although I was a teenager, I was very aware of the fear that many adults possessed. And it was a time after the worst of the abuses had taken place. Already the disappearance of thousands had left many families bereft. But we were also quite aware of the continuing repression, both visually, because there were military barricades on neighborhood corners, and because we had a curfew every evening. And as I said, there was still a very palpable fear. I was also quite aware at the time of the comments by then-President Jimmy Carter, who was making Chile his focal point. And so at the United Nations, he was insisting that Chile had to be held accountable, and he was insisting on a return to democracy and human rights. So those that calling of the president at the time was also very impactful on me, because I did see that the world cared and that there was an insistence for change. One day when a friend of mine was performing in a dance performance downtown in Santiago, I went to go see her. It was in the afternoon, and I didn't know that there'd been an emergency curfew that had been called. So when I emerged from the theater, I came out and saw protesters being hosed down. I saw, you know, basically people being ushered off and arrested, and smoke different places. I don't know how, but I found a taxi, and the taxi whisked me home. And I remember getting home and seeing that my parents, my relatives, were quite afraid, and there I was. And throughout Santiago, you could hear clanging pots and pans from within houses, and that was the protest of everybody. And so it was just this resounding echo throughout the city. Many years later, I had the opportunity, when I was working at the White House, to be part of the U.S. delegation to see the inauguration of President Ricardo Lagos, who himself had been a political prisoner and had been exiled during that period of repression. And this time, we also heard the pots and pans clanging, but everybody knew that it was because it was a victorious celebration. And it was just wonderful to see and to hear. I have had great mentors in my professional life who reinforced the notion that each of one of us can make a difference. And in particular, I need to mention the late Congressman Tom Lantos and his wonderful wife, Annette, who, as Holocaust survivors, made it their mission to make a difference. And after leaving the University of Virginia, that was my first real employment. They gave me the opportunity and the platform in the U.S. Congress to form a bipartisan coalition to focus on human rights and to set an agenda. And so there, working very closely with both Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and liberals, it was a wonderful chance to put people together and say, it doesn't matter, no details are relevant here, I don't care political views, I don't care gender, I don't care, it doesn't matter. The issue is no one should be treated this way. And so it was a great time when you could get commitments and have that be the case. And so through that, we did set an agenda. We covered human rights in over 100 countries. We've had all sorts of hearings on human rights, and we were really a voice. And I had the great opportunity in that capacity of working with leaders and meeting leaders such as His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Bishop Bello of East Timor, Wangari Maathai of Kenya, and so many others who really inspire us. And more recently, I've also had the chance to work with lesser-known individuals, but who are equally courageous and effective, such as Wasma Froh, who I'm sure you will hear about in Afghanistan, and Rose Mapendo of the Democratic Republic of Congo. They represent many others whose voices are silenced but not forgotten. Over the last few years, I have been focusing special attention on rights, human rights for women. In the United States, we enjoy many rights and opportunities that are severely denied in many other countries. Discrimination and violence against women are rampant around the world, and the United Nations estimates that 3 in 5 women will face physical and or sexual violence in her lifetime. When I was at Amnesty International, I met with a group of mothers in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, who shared with me haunting accounts of what had happened to their daughters. And as I listened, I was looking around the room, and there were two beautiful little girls who were playing so happily. And that's the image that I carry with me, because even as I watched them and rejoiced in their happiness, I couldn't help but wonder, and my heart ached to wonder at what time that joyful light might fade and whether they would even live to be adults. And so that's something that I continue to carry with me. These types of abuses are profoundly immoral, and they also rob nations of the potential of half their citizenry. But it does not have to be the case. All over the world, there are initiatives that are taking place at a local level, and they are bringing about change. It takes a concerted effort. It takes a purposeful effort. It has to be intentional. But it can be done, and we really need to play our part in partnering in these efforts. Another important step for the United States, I think, in partnering with the world on these issues is to ratify the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW. I try very hard not to take it personally that we have not ratified this human rights treaty, but it is astounding to me. It is the landmark international agreement that protects women's human rights and affirms principles of equality around the world. The United States is one of 7 countries that has not ratified, with Sudan, Somalia, Iran, and 3 Pacific Islands, which I can mention if you really want to know. But really, ratifying the treaty would strengthen the United States as a global leader for women's human rights. And it is a very important tool. While I continue to work for global human rights, in recent years, I've also set my sights locally. And I'm frequently reminded of the words of one of the great human rights leaders, Eleanor Roosevelt, and I'm going to read you one of her quotes because it is one of my favorites. "Where, after all, do universal human rights begin? In small places close to home, so close and so small that they cannot be seen on any map of the world, yet they are the world of the individual person. The neighborhood we live in, the school or college we attend, the factory, farm, or office where we work. Such are the places where every man, woman, and child seeks equal justice, equal opportunity, equal dignity without discrimination. Unless these rights have meaning there, they have little meaning anywhere. Without concerted citizen action to uphold them close to home, we shall look in vain for progress in the larger world. Taking this vision to heart, in my community, I'm partnering with neighbors, teachers, local leaders, and we are working to ensure that every child in our county gets the best possible public education. In particular, schools are unprepared for the growing number of students with autism spectrum disorder. Many of them are exceptional, but they require services and accommodations. I am proud to say we are making progress. Parent advocacy has already brought about important victories when it comes to attention deficit disorder and mental illness. And I believe firmly that these investments make a difference in improving the education for all students. The small victories feel really big. All of my work, globally and locally, would be much harder, if not impossible, without the two newest blessings in my life, my loving husband, Brian, who is always supportive and who is my rock, and our dear son, Thomas Eduardo, who is a constant inspiration. My deep determination comes from the firm belief that all of us can make a real difference. We are all privileged and talented in different ways and have a responsibility to act. Our challenge is to scrutinize situations for its strengths and weaknesses, to envision what can be and what it may take to get there, and then to do whatever is possible to make that happen. I believe that the University of Virginia is founded on this very principle. When I think of Thomas Jefferson, at the core, for me, his legacy is always explore, evolve, and embrace a challenge, and remember that you are a citizen of the world. I cherish the many friendships I formed here and the mentors who have helped shape me. And I am proud to be an active member of the Alumni Association and a graduate of the University of Virginia. Thank you very much.